Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally, normally joined by Sean Boyd, but filling in graciously here on the Double is co-host extraordinaire, special co-host John Jensen. John, what's going on?
Sean, my man. Good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be listening, and good morning, halfway around the world in Asia. It's not too bad here in the Pacific Northwest as we are commencing with the start of a new week. And what a weekend we had, my friend.
Not only that, but the official first day of summer. And I know temperatures, especially in Western Washington, are looking like it in the 80s and 80 plus, definitely here in the 509 as well.
Oh, yes. Nothing like a little heat in the Columbia Basin and the Yakima Valley area, right?
Well, JJ, let's take a look at, of course, Sean Boyd unable to join us. Why? Because he is wrapping up duties, closing down the NBA Finals for ABC and ESPN. He worked the game yesterday, game 7 of those finals, and what a game it was between the Cavs and the Golden State Warriors.
A dramatic game indeed. It was nip and tuck all the way through. We can break down the numbers, figures, stats, and facts of that contest. But what was really riveting in that game, from my perspective, I listened to a good chunk of the game on ESPN Radio with Hall of Famer Hubie Brown and Kevin Calabro. And we've got a little we're going to sidetrack on KC in a little bit. But I did hear a majority of the game on radio, and then caught the fourth and final quarter with Mike Breen and company on ABC, and it was a defensive battle, to say the least. It was ugly for a stretch of about 3.5 minutes. No scoring, not a heck of a lot of plenty of activity, plenty of shots put up, nothing could go in. Is up and down the floor for 3.5 minutes. Oh, sorry, right around the 4:30 mark, if my memory shoots right. And when Kyrie Irving, the key shot of the game, this is going to be one of the highlights, one of the trademarks, if you will, with the NBA for many years to come. When Kyrie Irving was on. Out onto the right flat, Steph Curry was covering him up close and personal. Curry left his feet a little too quick, and Kyrie Irving dropped the big bomb, a dagger in the heart of the Oracle Arena, faithful of over 19,000. And I think That just let the air out of the balloon right there in the East Bay.
Absolutely a huge shot by Kyrie Irving, and a bit of redemption for him personally as he was injured a lot of the playoffs last season, so he couldn't help as he thought he could and showed he could last night by hitting that huge shot. It wasn't LeBron putting the nail in the coffin or the dagger. It was Kyrie Irving and both of those players, LeBron, Kyrie Irving. You can add Kevin Love into the mix. A great team there in Cleveland. And they were able to come back down 3-1, the first team ever. And, JJ, I said ever.
Ever.
To come back, ever? Win a series, down 3-1.
Right. And if you look in, looking into the box score, I mean, what a show that the Irving had. He was on the floor 43 minutes. He was a sharp shooter. Went 10 of 23, 2 of 5 from long range, perfect in 4 tries from the line of charity. Had a plus 10. and also pulled it, got about 6 rebounds in the game, 26 points in the contest, contributed nicely with a steal, a blocked shot. I think that he was definitely the glue that kept everything together. LeBron, he led the charge, you know, from Alpha to Omega. Going, he messed around and got a triple-double going 27, 11, and 11. Three block shots. I think that block shot in with around a minute to go or less than a minute to go in the ball game when Iguodala tried to go for the layup and Bron just pinned that rock on the glass. No, rebuked, rejected, and absolutely denied.
And how about the fact that the Cleveland Cavaliers, not only being the underdog in this series, yes, they've been the favorite in the Eastern Conference for the last couple of years, and LeBron's gotten them close to the brink of a championship, but finally being able to bring a championship to the great fans of Cleveland that have had heartache after heartache with the Browns, the Indians, and the Cavs, and finally LeBron, on his second stint with his hometown Cleveland Cavaliers, helps getting it done to bring that championship to Cleveland.
Promises made, promises kept. He wrote in the letter that he wanted to lead the Cavaliers to on the road to get an NBA championship. And no, promises made, promises kept. And he was true to his word. You know, sure that Bron has his doubters and the haters, but hey, haters can hate. You don't hate the player, you hate the game. And LeBron brought the game, scoring 41 in Game 5, 41 in Game 6, and then wrapping it up with a triple-double. Unanimous vote for the as playoff MVP. Much deserved. A long time coming for the city of Cleveland and throughout the state of Ohio, for that matter. It's like as soon as the clock hit zeros, it was pandemonium all throughout the Buckeye State.
Absolutely. And in terms of being the underdog, of course, a lot of our listeners here in the Pacific Northwest and even down in Northern California, although a lot of them may not be thrilled with Golden State losing, but we can all relate to the underdog, especially in Seattle. And even in Portland, the Trailblazers, the Seahawks, the Sonics, the former Sonics, the Mariners, not very often have they been favorites. Yes, the Seahawks have had a great run in the last 4, 5, 6 years where they've been at or near the top and look to come back big time here in 2016. But, you know, there's something to be said about that Rudy mentality, about the, you know what, the world's against us, but we could come together and get it done.
And with the crew that Cleveland had, I mean, they only rolled 8 players. They went with an 8-man rotation. You know, Tyronn Lue. I mean, he came in. Well, he came in pretty much at the early to towards mid portion of the season. You know, taking over the lead, taking over the role as head coach, and the youngest NBA head coach at the age of 39, and he led his team to an NBA world title.
Just amazing that he's not even 40 years old. Tyronn Lue, the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers, is now an NBA champion head coach.
And I think that the great folks, Dan Gilbert and the entire Cleveland Cavalier organization, you know, there's no doubt they're going to relish this. They've got a strong nucleus to build on, you know, for years to come, and it's really going to be the telltale sign if LeBron is he going to opt out of his current deal. That option is still there. Is Kevin Love going to? Will he be with the club going into next year, or will he be dealt with it? No, so much, so many questions that to be answered, but they can wait for another time. Right now, it's just a matter of soaking in the moment and relishing in the fruits of the labor and the labor that that franchise put through against all odds and brought the Larry O'Brien trophy home.
Did you happen to see, John, that the Cavaliers decided to make a pit stop, a detour, and land the plane at McCarran International Airport in Las Vegas and party it up big time at, what was it, Club XS?
I was not aware of that, but I mean, hey, best thing to do on a Sunday night, from Oakland to Vegas. Why not do it up right?
And the Cavs were probably flying over Vegas anyway to get back east to Cleveland, so I'm sure it didn't take a twist of the arm too hard for the Cavs to agree to land that plane in Las Vegas and party it up, because, hey, you only win a championship. Heck, some people don't ever win a championship unless you're, Jordan and you get 5-6 rings. So they definitely had fun last night and early this morning in Vegas.
Oh, well, Vegas, that town never sleeps. And I don't think the city of Cleveland has, they've stopped partying yet. I mean, it's going to be crazy in that championship. The championship parade will be happening sometime in the latter part of the week.
Could you imagine being at a club in Vegas, listening to the music, talking to your friends, maybe having your favorite beverage, and all of a sudden, LeBron James and company walk in?
Hey, it'd be like the old song from Poison. It ain't nothing but a good time, and it don't get better than this, man. Partake. Partake by all means.
Definitely great memories to be had by the Cleveland Cavaliers and their fans as well, who, as you said, are still partying here the day after. Now, JJ, let's give our listeners an idea of who you are, what you're about, and your background. I know that you and I met personally, what was it, 2-3 years ago in Kennewick, the Toyota Center.
Yep.
You were getting set to do the NWAC basketball tournament call play-by-play. And, of course, I have lived in the Tri-Cities for a number of years, and our paths crossed. And, through social media, we have seen each other's work and have a lot of co-mingled friends. And
yes, mutual comrades in a number of fields, yes.
So the floor is yours. John Jensen, you are about what and have done what and all of that good stuff.
Well, born and raised Washington State. Traveled a little bit. I've been involved in broadcasting over 30 years, so mostly with radio. Worked from the mom and pop shops to the major market in Seattle. From the mom and pop shop aspect, basically wearing many hats. Have done everything from sweeping floors to turning wrenches and screws and building. And building up stations all the way to the technical side of the house with IT and studio engineering. On air wise, I've been a news reporter, news anchor, production specialist, commercial voiceover guy, disc jockey. Now also been doing sports play by play for high school, NCAA Division I, NWAC Junior College, and some pro level sports. For the better part of 30 years, and great experiences. Also, while amongst on the broadcast side of the house, also served in the United States Air Force. Did a 4-year enlistment, and I was stationed in Tokyo, Japan, with the 5th Air Force, the Pacific Air Force Command, and did time with the Far East Network, which is part of the Armed Forces Radio and Television Service. A couple of months ago, I'm originally from Northwest Washington, primarily the Skagit Valley and Whidbey Island area. And now I call the South Sound part of the state home. Own and operate a bowling pro shop here in the state capital of Olympia. And I own and operate a sports portal and web streaming business. And the website is soundsportsnet.com. And again, been established since 2012. And looking forward to bringing some great people on board and covering high school sports throughout the South Sound region, including the South Puget Sound League 2A and 4A, and Pierce County League, the newly formed North Puget Sound League, and the South Sound Conference, which is in Class 3A. And all that will be happening starting in September.
Well, JJ, that is quite the resume, and you've done a lot. And, hey, thank you for your 4 years of service to our great country. And by you moving down to the 360 and taking things to the state capitol and the South Puget Sound, of course, that's an area I know very, very well. Grew up in the Lacey Olympia area, a North Thurston alumni. So great to see that some of those teams will be getting some coverage and a lot of airtime on SoundSportsNet.com.
It's going to be a great time. I've been communicating with administrators and looking forward to meet with coaches and booster clubs and tying everything together with local mom and pop businesses, regional entities, and corporate folks that are based here in the Northwest. I really want to have that local feel, that local flavor, and deliver a top flight product, because this area here in the South Sound, it's been long overdue, a long time coming, and I saw the opportunities and took advantage of them. Of course, made the moves, and looking forward to great things coming. Or things are slowly but surely coming into place, but we'll get everything kicked off with Sound Sportsnet coming up this fall.
Well, looking forward to that for sure. Now, John, with everything you've done in your broadcasting career, what would be a highlight if you had to choose one?
Well, I would have to say, well, the first one would be doing play-by-play for my alma mater, which was Washington State University. I went into school after I did 4 years in the Air Force. I've been in broadcasting prior to going into military service, and did play-by-play for my alma mater. And then time in Seattle, working on air, working nights, overnights, and weekends with great folks at the old 95.7 KJR FM. KJR, synonymous call letters in the Pacific Northwest for well over half a century. Of course, it was 950 AM KJR. They were the hit music station, you know, the 60s and the 70s, and tweaked it around a little bit in the 80s, and then they got into on the sports talk side of the house, and we know a lot of personalities there over the years, and it was also a longtime home for the Seattle Supersonics. And that's pretty much it. I feel like Ricky Nelson. I'm a traveling man making lots of stops.
Good stuff, JJ, yes. For sure. And I'll answer my own question. You know, I think probably off the top of my head, one of the funnest, best moments in the broadcasting world was working the NFC Championship game against the San Francisco 49ers that the Seahawks hosted when they ultimately prevailed, moving on to Super Bowl 48, where thankfully they would go on to beat the Denver Broncos back in New York, New Jersey. Just an amazing atmosphere and such a great event to be a part of.
Well, funny you mentioned that Super Bowl 48. Well, I was I went to a local sports bar. I was residing on North Whidbey Island, and I missed about a quarter and a half of that game while the beatdown was going on in the Meadowlands. I locked my keys in the car, and it was not a good time. Believe me, I was stressed. It was like I wanted my beverage, but couldn't take beverages outside. So that was my dilemma for Super Bowl 48. But eventually, when I got in, I got in there while the getting was good before the beatdown really commenced.
Crazy stories, great memories for sure. And this is On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally with guest host John Jensen, or JJ as he's known. When we return after this, we'll come back, talk a little bit about Major League Baseball now that we're into the days of summer, and also touch on the NFL football ranks more after this. You're listening to On the Double with the Double S Express.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400. The safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to Andro400.com. Andro400.com. Guys, are you tired of being tired? Frustrated because it seems impossible to lose belly fat? If you're looking for a solution, then listen to Mark.
I had fantastic results with the Andro 400 Max. Probably lost 35 pounds, and more impressive than that was the inches I lost off of my belly and my waist. And the increased energy is fantastic. I'll be totally honest, I tried a different product, and I wasn't happy with the different product. You guys are considerably cheaper than the other brand, and I can really feel the difference.
Andro 400 Max, the extra strength, all natural testosterone booster. The safe, easy, and affordable way to gain energy and lose stubborn belly fat. Satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. Feel and look like a new man. Go to Andro400.com or call 888-400-0435. 888-400-0435.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally, normally joined by Sean Boyd to make the Double S Express, but tonight we are joined by excellent guest co-host John Jensen of SoundSportsNet.com. JJ, thanks for your time tonight.
Hey, man, thank you so much for extending the invitation. It's an honor and a pleasure to be in your company as well as your fans. It's just getting my chops going again. Won't be long before we get into high school football around the Northwestern and across the country, but got other things to turn our attention to at this time. First of all, what transpired yesterday in the world of golf out at Oakmont.
You got that right. The U.S. Open, a fun event. As everybody in the Pacific Northwest knows very well from last year, this time, Chambers Bay in University Place hosting the prestigious event. But this time it is on the other coast, the right coast, and things went well for one Dustin Johnson.
Yes, indeed. Dustin Johnson, he bailed out the USGA governing body by playing well down the stretch on Sunday at the 116th U.S. Open. His challengers cooperated by playing poorly. A huge break for DJ. You know, created enough a big enough stroke swing that could have been the toughest rules decision by the USGA history. Basically, was of no consequence. Now, a quick recap. On the fifth hole during the final round of the Oakmont Country Club, Johnson ran a 7-foot birdie putt 4 feet past the cup as he prepared to hit his second putt. Johnson then took some practice strokes besides his ball as he stepped to address the putt. But before he grounded the club, Johnson noticed his ball had moved slightly. Quickly, he called in rules official Mark Newell, and Johnson told him that the ball moved a bit backward, but he had not addressed his putt by grounding his club. Newell confirmed with Johnson, quote, "And you didn't address it?" close quote. At that point, playing partner Lee Westwood confirming Johnson's view, Newell determined that a rule had not been broken. Johnson played on and made his putt. About the time Johnson reached the ninth hole, however, the managing director of rules and competitions for the USGA, Jeff Hall, had video brought to his attention that he said had caused concern. And after studying the video and consulting with Thomas Pagel, the senior director of rules and golf of amateur status with the USGA, the two met Johnson on the 12th tee, where Johnson arrived with a one-stroke lead. They told Johnson that the USGA had reviewed video and that officials needed to talk to Johnson about his being the possible cause of moving of his ball moving on the fifth green. And Hall said, quote, "We told him he could very well be assessed a one-stroke penalty." Johnson crushed a drive of the 12th hole more than 350 yards. He later said that the rules issue didn't weigh on him as he played on. Now, he told himself, paraphrasing, he told himself, "We'll worry about it when the job gets done." And Johnson felt he was safe because he had not grounded his club behind the ball. The focus on the next shot, he did it from there, went all the way to the house. It just made him and the golf course. That's the only two entities that were involved. That's all his concern was. Yet Johnson, he wasn't as sharp on his shot making, which had been superb over the next few holes. With 210 yards remaining on the second shot on the par 5-12, he had a bad push in the long rough. He didn't get up and down for the birdie that he was counting on. And on the par 3 13th, he pulled his approach into the bunker, managed to make a great recovery to save par. And on the par 4 14th, he three-putted. And the pressure looked like it might have been getting to Johnson, just as it seemed to in other instances throughout his star-crossed major career. Now, the whole thing didn't sit right with the qualified observers, though. On the Fox broadcast, analysts Paul Azinger and Brad Faxon were both adamant in their view that Johnson had done nothing to move his ball. Then an influential trio of young stars took to social media, issuing declarations on Twitter that were devastating to the USGA in the court of public opinion. And then breaking it down, in summary, the USGA is to be respected for wanting to get its rules right and making sure that the rules are followed. But it seems that in trying to fix a flawed rule, bracketed, players were drawing penalties for wind-blown balls just moving because they had grounded their club. The governing body created other potential problems that were almost became a living nightmare at Oakmont. Now, imagine if Johnson had finished in a tie but ended up losing by one because of that penalty. As he said, quote, "I'm glad it didn't matter. That would have been bad," close quote. The lesson he learned from the bullet that the USGA dodged on Sunday, and if for you duffers out there, note this. Rule 18 needs further fixing and fast. And there you have it. You're on the ball and up to date as Dustin Johnson wins the 116th U.S. Open.
So for those that do not know out there in radio land, do you know exactly what grounding the club means? Does that mean you're setting up for your shot? Does that mean the club touches the ground as you align your shot? What exactly is that?
Basically, you're tapping the head of the golf club into the ground to where there could be the possibility that the club could get in contact with the ball accidentally. No, just a quick tap and setting yourself. If you follow my gist here, you know, you want to make sure that you get yourself established and aligned. Make sure you get everything proper in terms of your feet, your club, your swing. But in tapping the club on the ground, there could have been the potential of that club, a club face, or any part of that club making contact with the ball. And if that were to occur, that could have caused a one-stroke penalty. But that was not the case because the club was nowhere close to the ball when the ball had moved.
Two straight years of controversy in the back-to-back U.S. Opens, of course, last year here locally at Chambers Bay. The professional golfers that are paid to golf for a living complaining, a good majority of them complaining about the toughness of the course and how crazy the greens are. And now this year you have a rules issue, but it sounds like they got it right in the end.
Well, where Chambers Bay was concerned, I mean, no, it's a challenging course, and you know, you got to play where the ball lies. You know, with almost any sport where there's a lot of variance involved, you got to get comfortable with the surroundings. You got to have an understanding with your surroundings and be able to match up your game and have it to be most conducive as possible in order to be able to get the awards and the rewards from sound quality decisions and course play.
Well, JJ, there is another sport in full swing, and we are now into summer. So let's talk about the game that is known as America's pastime, Major League Baseball, the American League West. The Seattle Mariners were doing great things until 2 to 3 weeks ago, and the wheels are starting to fall off in Seattle.
Yeah, well, don't count the chickens before the hatch. Yes, they've hit a rough patch, but primarily to the injury bug. I mean, first you lose King Felix. Taiwan Walker now is hurt, and to add insult to injury, the Mariners' bullpen has been absolute garbage, and General Manager Jerry DePoto, he had to call up some young kids up from Tacoma, not only to fill the holes in the starting rotation, but to get themselves situated. At one time, you know, the Mariners, they were leading the American League West, and then things just kind of turned south on them. And right now, on their current road trip, 2-4, where they were at Tampa, they lost 2 of 3 at Tampa Bay, losing 2 of 3 at Boston. And guess what? Seattle's got to take on the Motor City Kitties in Detroit. And right now, Detroit's playing one game under 500. Third place behind the Cleveland Indians, and a full four and a half games. Detroit is behind Cleveland. The Mariners, at one stretch, they had the lead. They are now down 8.5 games. Texas is on fire. The Rangers have a 6-game winning streak.
Yeah, JJ, and that's something that Sean Boyd likes to point out, that, you know, same old Mariners, you know, they're in it for a while, they're a conversation, but all of the Pacific Northwest will turn their attention to the Seattle Seahawks, which may well happen. But as you said, don't count your chickens before they hatch. The Mariners played well for basically 2 months of the season, and it's still a lot of baseball left, more than half the season left. So to write them off now is a bit premature. They can right the ship just as quickly as things hit some rough waters. and, you know, the steady mind of their manager and general manager will help with that.
Scott Service is a first-year manager with the Mariners and Jerry Dipoto. They are on the same page. Mariners are just they're dealing with some a few issues right now. Injuries, poor performance in the bullpen, and they got to get those things shored up. Mariners, they've got bats. I mean, Robinson Cano, Goody, Nelson Cruz. They're playing quite well, and Daeho Lee has been a very welcomed surprise for the M's. And it's going to be interesting to see how the Mariners can hold up before they get to the All-Star break, because it is by no means, Sean, it is not going to be easy for Seattle.
And who doesn't love Daeho Lee with that big leg kick, that long swing? And he's hitting home runs more than anything. He finally had his first extra base hit the other day that was not a home run. He hit a double. Prior to that, all of his extra base hits were home runs. And I really wonder why he isn't playing closer to every day. Yes, they want to get the pitching matchups and have the righty-lefty with him and Adam Lind. But come on, the guy's producing. He's hitting near 300. He's on pace if he were to play every day for 30-plus home runs. You need that in your lineup.
Well, having a home run to at-bat ratio of around one home run for every 10 at-bats, that's absolutely filthy from the gentle giant from Korea. It does make sense to be able to platoon, because Adam Lind, the kid can take the meat to the street as well. It all comes down to knowing when to use the pieces and use them effectively. And offensively, the Mariners, they've had a few shortcomings in recent games, but at the same time too, they've been very close games on this recent road trip.
That's right. You know, they're not getting blown out for the most part. You're not seeing 10-2 losses. You're seeing more frustrating 2-1 losses, like the other day in Boston when Seattle had a 1-0 lead the entire time. And that's what I think is going wrong lately. They're getting part of the puzzle right, whether it be the hitting or the pitching, but not both at the same time.
You got to be able to be in sync, but you roll with the punches. Baseball, it's a funny game. There's 162 of them in the regular season, and it's not necessary. And it's not, we know the old adage, it's just not how you start, it's how you finish. You know, you never focus on the end result. You always work on the process. The process being the journey. How do you go through adversity in the given situations? This is a major adverse time for the Mariners with dealing with the injury bug of King Felix and Taijuan Walker and the poor performance of their bullpen. They've got to really tighten the reins up.
Well, I can say this much. Felix can't be hurting that bad, and hopefully he'll be back sooner rather than later, because he was at his son's baseball tournament over the weekend, which just so happened to be one of my cousin's kids' baseball tournament as well in the Seattle area. So Felix was gracious enough to sign baseballs for the kids, take pictures. He tried to stay incognito as best he could for a while, but you know that candle will definitely burn out.
That's not likely to happen. You know, you can only lay low for so much. It's like, I mean, you're number one pitcher for the hometown team. You know, sure, the man has got to have his private life. That's respected. At the same time, too, he pays it forward. He's very well ingrained in the community, and that was really good on him to be able to go the distance, to go up and beyond the call.
Well, the other professional team in Seattle wrapped up its mini camp this past week, and now the players are off for 6 weeks. And last Monday, the reason, JJ, we did not have a show here on the Double last Monday, a live show, I should say, was because I was busy working at the VMAC, Seahawks headquarters, for CBS Sports, and getting things ready for their broadcast season, getting still shots of various players, and also video for motion graphics and their football package on CBS.
Outstanding, man. Look forward to seeing your work.
Yeah, it was a great time to get a little bit of a few minutes with, you know, the big important Seahawks like a Russell Wilson, the up-and-coming running back in Thomas Rawls, who's recovering from the ankle injury, guys that have returned to the team like a Brandon Brown or a Chris Clemens, and, of course, all the rookies as well, and have them get their first taste of looking into a camera and talking to TV land, and they had a lot of fun with it. It was a good time.
I got a really good feeling about this Seahawks club, but we'll soon find out once we get into the preseason workouts.
Absolutely. You know, it's going to be very interesting to see how things shake out and if Jimmy Graham can come back at full strength right away from his torn patella. I did see him walking the hallway and up and down stairs. Didn't seem like he had any issue, and Pete Carroll said this week that he expects him to be ready to go. So that would be a great help to that offense in Seattle.
And you go from the, you know, you go from the NFL to college football. That'll be kicking off. Before we know it, man. Right now, going through some summer workouts, and they did spring ball and just getting things tuned up, prime and ready, man. I'm looking forward to college football, especially in the Pac-12.
Oh, absolutely. How great would this be, JJ, if the Mariners can get back on track and be within wild card and or division contention, the Seahawks playing great or better than last year, and the two major Pac-12 college teams in the Washington Huskies and the Washington State Cougars both are in the top 25 preseason poll. So this could be an amazing fall, one we haven't seen in the Northwest, if I can speak.
It's like, wow, man, why can't you say that dang word? but yes, it won't be too long now, as they'll get a chance to look at the upcoming schedule for the University of Washington Huskies and Washington State Cougars. Of course, you're going to have a lot of non-league action. There'll be some cupcake games and getting things all in place there.
And absolutely. And for the fan in the Pacific Northwest, how great would it be for all of those teams to be relevant at the same time? I don't think that's ever happened.
Would love it. I'm trying to get things pulled up over here, and it's not playing quite nice right now. But let's sort this out right now. We'll take a look first at the University of Washington Huskies for football. And the computer has definitely been acting up here. It's just been one of those days. So with where the Husky schedule is concerned, finally, there we go. Okay, September 3rd, the first three games for the Huskies, they're all at home. Out on Montlake, they take on Rutgers on Saturday, September the 3rd, and that's an 11 a.m. Pacific game. Then the following Saturday, September 10th, they take on the Idaho Vandals. And then Saturday, September 17th, against Portland State before the Dogs get into Pac-10 play. And this year, Apple Cup will be in Pullman. They'll take on, of course, they'll take on the Washington State Cougars. And it's the North Division is going to be absolutely tough.
How ridiculous would Pullman be the week end of Thanksgiving if the Apple Cup is for the Pac-12 North title?
Oh, I think that you would have a lot of families. You'd have a lot of families making the trek for Thanksgiving. No doubt about it. They'll celebrate Thanksgiving on the Palouse and Eastern Washington, which is nothing but a great time.
And you look at what Chris Peterson's doing for the Huskies, and then conversely, Mike Leach at Washington State. For the Cougars, things have gone a little bit slower. Success hasn't been as fast as an instant as everybody wants it now with today's instantaneous videos and social media, and I want everything now. But unfortunately, in the real world, that's not how, especially in the college ranks, things happen. You have to recruit your players that fit your system and get everyone to buy into what's happening, and that's finally happened in Pullman.
And the swashbuckling hero with Mike Leach, you know, the pirate mentality that Leach has brought forth, the culture, people buying into it, and it's going to pay off. Looking at the schedule for Washington State, they'll have a kick game against Eastern Washington on Saturday, September the 3rd, and that's a 5 p.m. Pacific time start. That game will be on the Pac-12 networks. Then the following Saturday, September 10th, on ESPN2, I may add, Washington State will be on the Smurf Turf in Boise, Idaho, as they battle with the Boise State Broncos. And that's a 7:15 Pacific kickoff. And then the Palouse rivalry, Wazoo and Idaho at Pullman, on Saturday, September 17th at 11 a.m. That game will be televised on the Pac-12 networks. Cougars, their first Pac-12 North contest at home, Saturday, October 1st, against the Oregon Ducks.
The hated Oregon Ducks. Definitely both Washington schools do not like those Ducks from Eugene.
No, no. No, the quack attack will not be, hopefully won't be prevalent in those matchups. But Oregon always comes through with quality teams. But I think it's truly going to be a battle in the Pac-12 North this year.
Be a great time in the fall for football, as always, from the high school ranks on up through the professional ranks. And speaking of those professional Seattle Seahawks, I had a fun time on Saturday in Lacey at Timberline High School. As you well know, JJ, a little bit of celebrity basketball action going down with myself and a friend of ours, Nick Beckman, and a former guest here on the Double, Mr. Beckman, handling public address duties. And it was put on by Mike Goff and his Arsenal Promotions, and Cassius Marsh on the defensive line, who actually is possibly moving to linebacker, looking to fill the spot vacated by Bruce Irvin on the field in Seattle. He was the headlining name, and you also had Seahawk Kaysen Williams, former Seahawk Jordan Babineau, offensive lineman Terry Poole, and can't forget Deshaun Fox as well. Great guys doing great things in the community for the Seahawks.
I look forward to meeting all those cats down the road. And the thing about Seahawks, former Seahawks, and folks that are, you know, everyone who still make the Northwest home, you know, the greater Pacific Northwest home, is even though they may be out of the game, they love giving back to the community and being involved in charitable organizations and functions, and that clearly shows, you know, where their heart is at, and that is in the community and supporting ventures and endeavors that really impact very important people.
And it's good to see that the players do give their time and do take the time to shake hands, sign autographs, take pictures with the fans, and it's a way for the fans to, you know, have that moment and that memory, not only from being at the event, but something to take with them, an autograph, a photo, etc.
It's all about good times and great company and building relationships. You know, it's, you know, athletes, you know, they put in all the hard work, dedication to master their skills and their craft. And when they're able to let loose, they're still giving. They're still bringing people together. And that is a beautiful thing.
Speaking of good times, JJ, it's been a fun one here tonight on The Double. Thank you so much for stepping in and pinch hitting for Sean Boyd, who's doing good things in Oakland, although he's a little sad since the Warriors did not bring home a second straight championship. But he's working the TV side of the NBA Finals. And thanks for your time. Your insight was great having you on. And definitely, everybody, go check out John's work at SoundSportsNet.com.
Sean, thank you so very much. Hey, y'all, be good to you and yours. Be healthy, be happy, and by all means, please do be safe out there every day and every way.
The start of summer is here. Have fun in the sunshine. Be safe. For John Jensen, I'm Sean Wally. You're listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests on The Double with the Double S Express.